Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. We're joined by Jason Barrett. Jason is a longtime consultant in the sports talk radio industry. He oversees the website sportsradiopd.com. You can follow him on Twitter at sportsradiopd. Jason, can you, before we're going to spend vast majority of the time now talking about all this Francesa stuff that's going on. It's been really crazy. But before we get to that, can you give like kind of a 90-second elevator pitch on your background and why you're really one of the foremost experts to discuss this type of story?
Yeah, you know, happy to do it. Good to be with you, Ryan. And, you know, the word expert is always one that feels awkward to me because to me, I'm just a former program director who loves sports radio and tries to elevate the profile, the format, and help brands get better. But ultimately, right now, I work with stations around the country in a number of markets to help them improve their programming, develop their talent, help them recruit talent. So a number of those kind of things, you know, as far as brand building is concerned. Career-wise, I started in upstate New York, paying dues in a small market, worked from there all the way to Bristol, Connecticut, where I spent 2 years working on the former show Game Night, which had Doug Gottlieb, Sean Salisbury, John Seibel, Freddie Coleman, among others. Also worked with Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann during that time. And then after spending time in Bristol, went on and started to program in Philadelphia for a short while with a station that's now 97.5, The Fanatic. At the time, it was on AM. I wasn't there very long. Moved to St. Louis. Spent 5 years there. Started out, the first 2 years were a complete disaster. Worked for a bad company and saw the ugly side of the business. But fortunately, got rescued by Bonneville. Built 101 ESPN, which is still a powerhouse to this day in the market. And then traveled west to the West Coast, 4 years building 95.7 The Game, and then decided 2.5 years ago to start my own company, and been doing that ever since. So there you go.
So you're quite the nomad, and you've had a lot of experience nationally and then in a bunch of different regions. Francesa, it's a really unique story because as he was having his farewell tour, it's like, well, what are you going to do? We always assumed you'd find something, but he must not have, because for him to be returning to drive time 3 to 7 p.m., according to Bob Braceman, it might be 3 to 6, 3 to 6:30, according to Andrew Marchand, but it really does seem all signs point towards him returning to afternoon drive at WFAN. That feels like a concession of defeat on both his side and the part of the station, which had ample time to pick his replacements and landed on Maggie Gray, Bart Scott, and Chris Carlin. Am I reading that right?
I think your assessment's spot on. I think there's a lot of egg on the face of a number of folks in this situation. And look, at the end, if listeners are happy to have Mike back, if the station's making more money by having Mike back, then going through some of this turmoil is worth it. Yeah, it doesn't look good when you've had 2 years notice that Mike Francesa was going to leave the air and you couldn't come up with a show that you believed in for longer than 5 months. That's a bad look on WFAN management. There's no other way to spin that. And I've got the most respect you're going to find on the planet for Mark Chernoff. I almost went to work for him a long time ago. I think Mark's excellent, but there's no other way to sugarcoat it. They had enough time to find a good replacement. And I'm sorry, I believe that there are replacements in this world. You know, the Yankees went on without Derek Jeter. We've seen ESPN function after Dan Patrick and Stuart Scott and many other legends. And, you know, as dominant as Mike has been for a long time, what's going to happen in 2 to 3 years when he leaves the next time? If you're a talent, isn't the first question going to be, do I have longer than 6 months to work here? I mean, that would be my pitch if I'm an agent representing them. You better believe if I was signing a contract, there's going to be a no cut in there for a long time. So, I mean, that being said, on the other hand, Mike had 2 years of setting up his retirement, of drawing a market for himself. I think he's brilliant at utilizing the New York media to drum up interest in what he does. And let's face it, he's been a polarizing figure for a long time. So people are interested in what Mike is going to do. But at 64, and knowing that 2 years, you know, away from his retirement from WFAN, his exit, if you will, he should have had some options there. And for him to come back at this point just shows that it does look like a desperate play. But in the end, if he's paid well, if he's happy, if he has a better show, a better time slot, and the fans are excited to have him back, they'll get past it. And in 3 months from now, we'll be looking at it going, okay, it's at least working. The guys that I feel bad in for all of this is Chris Carlin, Bart Scott, and Maggie Gray, because whether you like their show or don't like their show, it takes time for any new show to hit, especially when you're replacing a legend like Francesa. That's an enormous pressure on anyone stepping into that role. And maybe the show would have ultimately needed to be put out to pasture. Maybe it wouldn't have worked. But to not even get 2 ratings books is really tough to swallow. I feel for those guys.
And, I mean, the timing of this from Mike's perspective, he goes away in December. I think if I'm advising him, and I'm from the outside, I'm not privy to the discussions that he's working with Michael Levine, who's co-head of CAA Sports and Representation. As an aside, Levine is like a very powerful guy in the sports industry. He's negotiated big naming rights deals. He's involved in kind of the larger scale branding of people like Dwayne Wade and Aaron Rodgers, but he's not somebody who is a traditional media agent, and CAA has a lot of those. If I'm thinking of it from a media perspective and I'm Francesa, I try to do something kind of part-time to keep my visibility up, maybe swallow my pride about the short-term paycheck. And if I'm going to return to WFAN, I do it in August when there's been 2 ratings books. It's on the cusp of football season. You would project WFAN to be even in a bigger position of need then. And not to mention the fact that he goes away for most of July and August. So I don't know when he's going to be coming back, but let's say he's even back tomorrow. Then he's back for 2 months. He's gone for 2 months again. The timing of this is really weird.
Well, a couple things on that front. First of all, if there's an opening to be had, if you're in this business, you seize it. You don't wait for when it might be available down the road. What if the next book comes out, CMB beat Michael Kay? Which, by the way, with WFAN running New York Yankees games, when they start playing some of those 4 o'clock games and the tune comes up, guess what happens? They get a lift on that. And then all of a sudden the narrative starts to change. So I don't fault Mike if he sensed that there's an opening and an opportunity to get back there, and if he missed it. And look, his brand in New York is exceptionally strong. Outside of New York, there are questions about how impactful it is. That said, I do think he's one of those figures that people have interest in. But he's 64. And, you know, he's made a ton of money. He doesn't have to work, but he obviously loves to work. And if he wants to do this, whether it's for a year or 2 or 3, that's actually WFAN's issue to figure out. Like, if he comes back on the air, let's just say he's on the air, I don't know, May 15th. And two months later, he's off the air. What do you have as the under? May 15th or beyond that?
No, I could see him on the air, like, tomorrow or Wednesday.
Right. So let's just say we'll do that. He comes back on the day of the NFL draft. And all of a sudden, he's off the air 2-3 months later for a 6-week vacation in the summer. Whose issue really is that? Is that Mike's or is that WFAN? I'd say it's WFAN. They agreed to it. You know? So, I mean, the bigger question is, why does Mike feel the need to have to work when he's already accomplished everything he has? I mean, he's got the money. He's had the fame. If anything, Mike, do you want to become the guy that eventually starts to lose his fastball? I mean, Mike, you know, Michael Kay was gaining ground on Francesa over the last year. Now, he also never beat Francesa. So maybe Mike feels like there's this, like, I've got to come back and rescue this station because he likes to build himself that way. But the bottom line, you know, 2 years from now, the radio station is going to be in the same situation that it is today. And what I'm concerned about is if you had 2 years notice knowing that Mike was leaving and you couldn't come up with the answer, what are you going to do the next 2 years? Because you're eventually going to need to come up with that answer because Mike ain't going to be there forever as dominant as he's been.
It's such a weird spot with New York because it is this own ecosystem. Like I had this conversation with Steve Levy a couple weeks ago. There are a lot of people like he would have turned down ESPN in like 1993 or 1994 if CBS had given him the head sports anchor job, and he would have been content to stay in New York his whole life, he says. But if you're getting kind of a young, hungry person, that person might want to go national. But in New York, you have to be able to like really talk Yankees and Mets. And it's one of kind of those five or six cities where the sports talk radio person has to be super into baseball. And then but baseball talk is not useful on a national level. So it's like really tricky finding the right people for those jobs.
It is, but I think, you know, look, that goes back to, you know, and one of the reasons why I think it's fair to question Chernoff today is because he's been so damn good at these situations. Like, look, don't forget, when Imus bolted, and yes, that wasn't a sports show, but when that whole mess took shape and the fan was forced to deal with it, he landed on Craig Thornton with Boomer Esiason and he hit a home run. You know, when he's had to make, when Chris Russo left, he could have tried to force a partner in there with Mike. And obviously it only works if Mike really wants a partner. But in the end, he did go the route of trusting Mike 5.5 hours a day and it worked. So they've done a good job over the course of, you know, over the course of time at being effective in these situations. This one, though, I go back to when when Stern left radio and David Lee Roth took over, it was a disaster. And that thing had to be put to bed pretty quickly. And you know, the bottom line is this one kind of felt that way from the get-go. Like, how long till the Francesa reunion took place? It almost felt like whoever was going to go into that spot was in a really difficult position because would they be given the time to build the show? And you know, look, everything you said about New York sports is right. People here have a lot of passion. Your name's going to be in the news a lot. You've got to have thick skin and edge. And you've got to know baseball and football and basketball. Hockey, not as much. But you've got to be, you know, very astute on all these sports. And you've got to be able to mix it up and get people passionately invested in your show. And Mike was as good as they come at that. I believe there are other people out there. I know there are, but that, you know, whether or not others see the same talent, that's debatable. You know, and that's what makes each program director and executive unique. You know, they've got to have their own sense of who they think can get the job done. And obviously contracts, you know, being available and money being right plays into that too. But there are definitely options out there. It just comes down to whether or not, you know, they felt they had the best one to carry them forward. And clearly they didn't because they're going back to Mike.
If you give Michael Kay a truth serum, and Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg, for that matter, when they see the news that Francesa's coming back and going head-to-head against them, are they happy because they relish the challenge of beating him, or are they kind of upset because they finally won a book in Mail 2554 against WFAN, and they would have liked to continue definitely being on top for the time being?
I think any great competitor wants to beat the best. And I'm sure, look, you can easily look at that and say, well, Michael wanted to beat Francesa for a long time and he did it. And as soon as Francesa left, he won. Okay, well, if I'm Michael and I know I could beat the show that isn't there, I want to prove to myself that I can beat Mike Francesa. And look, if I was given, I have a lot of respect for Kay, LaGreca, and Rosenberg. I think those guys do a great job with their show. And, you know, in New York, even when Francesa was there in the past, I always look at a lot of these situations. Like, when you look at it from the media standpoint, where you like to pick winners and losers, there's a lot of times where it feels like, okay, these guys win, the others should go out of business. When in reality, it's great if there are two doing really well. And in New York, you had two really good afternoon shows. So it just came down to your preference. But one thing I would, if I was talking to the K show, is, hey, look, realistically, between April and September, WFAN are going to have the New York Yankees driving Cume on the radio station. You are not. And therefore, as long as the programming is solid, and you know, with Francesa, it would be, you're probably going to be at a disadvantage during those months. You've got to make your mark outside of baseball season, because ESPN New York doesn't have the Yankees to drive that Cume. And so, you know, the Knicks and Rangers haven't been, you know, dynamite for Cume and for driving ratings. The fans not going to count on the Nets or the Devils to, you know, spike their numbers. Come football season, when you get past, you know, the Yankees are probably going to play into October as long as they do what they're supposed to do. And so when you get past that, it really becomes a game of November to March. What can you do in that span if you don't have an advantage from play-by-play? And when it's about content, I think those two stack up pretty fair. You know, if you look at, I think it was the fall book, Kay was third and Francesa was second. I mean, that's a pretty good indication of what you have here with an afternoon drive.
Okay, and Francesa, in kind of bizarre comments to Neil Best of Newsday, he said, this was when this really went into a fever pitch this morning, was that he said the time has come for him to return for WFAN, and he said that there was a campaign against him from people who wanted to prevent it. And as soon as he became aware of that campaign, he had to return to spite them. That's not like the right reason for him to return, right?
Yeah, I don't even know what he's talking about there. I mean, look, sometimes you build up some buzz to try to make it look like you're returning for the people. And I'm sure, you know, look, the audience, I don't know about you. I know you follow Mike, and I listened to his final show, and I felt like, man, this sucks. This is a part of New York radio royalty that's going away. I really didn't want it to end. But we say that about a lot of great talent, a lot of great shows. You know, I felt the same way when the Sons of Anarchy episodes ended. I'm like, man, I'm in withdrawal. Where's my show? So we all go through it. The reality is that it happens. And so it comes back to, what's your succession plan? You know, if Mike wants to drum it up that he's like doing this noble cause to come back and rescue the station, I'd counter with, well, then why didn't you just figure that out before you left when Craig Carton's mess took place on the air? Like, at that point,
it would have been so much better if
a Band-Aid. Right, exactly. The radio station at that point needed a Band-Aid.
So much.
Yeah, because, look, at that point, if I'm a, you know, at the end of the day, Ryan, this comes back to ratings and revenue. If you're an advertiser in the fall and that mess just took place with Craig Carton, and look, kudos to Jerry Recco, Greg Giannotti, Boomer Esiason, those guys did a phenomenal job in the fall getting through and staying first in morning drive. But if you're an advertiser at that point, you start looking at what's going on and go, wait a second, am I going to continue to pay these rates when you've got this negative, you know, story, this black cloud hovering above your head? I'm probably going to take a little step back here, especially when I know Francesco's leaving. You know, that creates a lot of doubt with clients. And so, of course, like, look, if they had gotten the deal done with Mike in November that he's going to stay on, and hey, look, given the climate of what's going on here, it made a lot of business sense for us all to continue the relationship, I think it would have been seen as a real positive. Right now, it's coming across as, okay, in the end, when he gets behind a microphone, people will be happy because they do like hearing him on the air. But there's also this sense of, can Mike not move on, and can WFAN not move on? Why do these two sides seem like they can't function without each other? And it's a situation that is going to happen again. This is not the end of it. It's just whether it's in 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years, because it's not going to stop.
Well, I could see it going a while, though. It's really the thought of him hanging around until he loses a book to Michael Kay. That should be a little bit scary, but who knows? It's really interesting to see what they're going to do with this. I just want the names named of the people who mounted the campaign against him, if that exists, because I think that that would be very fascinating content for my line of work.
Well, when you find it, let me know. I'll be happy to read that piece because I think you're going to be searching for a while. But, you know, on that note, you just mentioned, if you know, Francesa losing a book. What if he loses next fall's book? You know, he'll tell you that's impossible. It's never happened. And from his track record, of course, you can't vote against him. But what if, right? So all of a sudden it happens and you've got him, you're counting on him for 3 years. At some point, it's going to happen. He's either going to retire again in 2 to 3 years, or you're going to lose momentum and go, damn it, we should have got out while we could. And so I just, you know, it goes back to you can hang on, and I'm not saying right now it doesn't make sense to. I from a business standpoint, you got to remember, Entercom just took over CBS this past year. There's a lot of money riding on WFAN. They need that station to thrive. And when you go through a change in morning and afternoon drive, that's a lot of revenue out the door. So I understand it from that standpoint. It makes too much business sense to have Mike there. But, you know, whether you could buy a year or two, you're going to be dealing with this again. That's not going to stop.
Okay. Real quick, pivoting away from Mike, I'm going to put you on the spot a little. Having seen WFAN realize that this was like kind of they made a mistake and they're undoing it, they're applying the Spaceballs reverse vacuum to their schedule. I know CMB is going to stay on for a couple hours, but they're essentially just putting it in reverse. Could you see ESPN making a similar decision and reinstating Mike and Mike because with like how Golic and Wingo, I don't know. It's hard to figure out what their ratings are. Get Up is down, I don't know, about 15% year over year versus SportsCenter in the slot. Could you see ESPN reverting to Mike and Mike in the next 18 months?
In 18 months, yes. In 3 or 4, no. And that's where, you know, I give them credit. I just recently caught up with Tra Keller, who runs the audio division for ESPN. And, you know, they typically give new shows anywhere between 18 and 24 months. And I think that, look, I look at what Get Up's going through, similar to when SC6 launched. The minute it came out, everybody was rooting for it to fail. There was a lot of negative stories written. And, look, the bottom line is if the ratings aren't strong right away, that's going to be a story. But I heard the same thing when Cowherd and Bayless launched on FS1. And it seems like in this day and age, there's just a lot of negative attention on new shows. Like if they don't come out of the gate firing and immediately lifting ratings, it's almost like, oh, geez, put that thing to bed. I have no idea if Get Up's going to work. Honestly, I'm not a guy who watches sports TV in the morning. I'm more a sports radio guy in the morning. And quite frankly, I like Greenberg. I liked him with Golic. I think they had a really good chemistry. I wouldn't probably have broken them up. But they obviously felt, you know, Greeny wanted to do his own thing, go his own direction, and take on a new challenge. And I got a lot of respect for any guy who wants to, roll the dice on his career and try to see if he could do something on his own. So from that standpoint, I think you mentioned 18 months, and I think that's fair. You know, if they're not in good shape, I think probably in 12 months, you'll have a bigger conversation ahead there as far. But whether or not at that point Golic would want to reunite with Greeny at that point, that could be a different conversation, because obviously it's well documented how they split, and whether or not those two would want to reunite down the road, that seems like there's going to have to be some heavy lifting there to make that work again.
Yeah, no, there was a lot of awkwardness in the time that it happened, but it seemed like they patched it up for the end and exited on good terms. You can fake that, I guess, but they really did seem to be endeared to each other at the end. It'll be interesting to see, because you mentioned like how they didn't give CMB a bunch of time. I just remember a couple years ago when Colin left ESPN Radio, and Dan Le Batard moved into his spot, affiliates were complaining right and left about how the show didn't talk sports enough or how people didn't like it. And now you look at ESPN Radio, and they have not only stabilized, but that show is soaring. So there is something to be said for giving some of these things more time.
Everybody likes to freak out over the first thing they hear that's different than the last thing. We all do it. The difference is when you're making those changes, you have to have a long-term view in mind. You cannot go if you're responsible for managing a brand and you're flip-flopping on your beliefs 3-4 months in, then I'm going to question whether or not you should be making those calls. Now, if you have a track record of being effective over a course of time and then you make a mistake, that's okay, because at least I can say, okay, like I'll use the fan as an example. Mark Chernoff's had 2 decades of pretty strong success. So if he made a mistake here and feels he has to reverse course, okay, fine. We all do it. I've made plenty of mistakes in the business. But if you're, you know, being trusted with a big spot and haven't done that before, and you're flip-flopping that quick, that's a bad look. And so most, you know, look, affiliates sometimes will complain about a new show. Why? Because they're trying to get leverage for themselves. They want more, you know, they want to lower their fee from ESPN. They want more breaks. You know, exclusive contributors on there. There's always an angle for some of these things. But just like, you know, any new show, when Skip leaves First Take, when Colin goes to FS1, when Greeny leaves ESPN, Francesa and the fans, everybody is going to react and overreact in many cases to the first show that they hear on a station. And so, you know, I think the hard thing is, did CMB do enough to grow confidence internally and externally over the last 4.5 months? And obviously, from inside the building, if you look at what's going on, they clearly didn't. And that's probably why there's a change going on. But at the same time, if you're on their side of the fence, you're going to argue, are you really expecting us to come out of the gate here and do what Mike Francesa did for 28 years when we've had 4 days on the job? I mean, that's crazy.
Is there any angle to this we didn't cover yet that you think is interesting?
No, I think most of it is, you know, the back and forth of Mike's position. I am really surprised by one thing. I thought for sure, and I know Mike's not loved by everybody at SiriusXM, but I thought for sure if there ever was a time for Mike to make a jump, the move was SiriusXM and MLB Network. Like, it was the, you know, you saw some shades of that and the buzz that they generated with High Heat when he and Russo connected and, you know, did their thing, taking a swipe at the fan. But I thought, you know, look, if they had at the time, I know, you know, Steve Torrey went in when Stephen A. Smith left, and had they brought Francesa in, there was the 1-3 spot. They could have done the crossover with Russo for a while, and that would have been attractive. But obviously, for whatever reason, it didn't work out. I think that's the pairing that at the end of the day, people miss the most. Those guys, whenever they're together, whether it's an hour or not.
Look, we know he doesn't need money, but we know that Francesa doesn't need money, but he was making like $3-4 million a year in his last run at WFAN. Sirius wasn't going to pay him anything approaching that. And so I just think that his ego wouldn't let him do this for less than he perceives that he's worth.
And that's true. And look, he certainly, you know, he's built the track record over his career to make those calls. And clearly he didn't feel comfortable. I could have argued that being inside of his home studio and not having a commute at all would have been a nice advantage. And I would say that he still would have generated a lot of buzz and probably grown their subscriber base had he been part of, you know, a show with Russo. But would he miss the New York day-to-day interaction? Would he start to, you know, because one of the challenges with Sirius sometimes is that they can do some incredible content, but it doesn't always become mainstream conversation. So I understand that side of it, but, you know, they also have shown over the course of the past decade, they're willing to pay talent. So if he was looking for a market beyond FAN, I thought that was the one that made the most sense for him. I never thought ESPN would be the play. Could he have done talk radio if he wanted to? Sure. You know, Imus just left. They're There was a spot open at ABC. He's obviously done a few things showing up on WOR. I just never saw Mike as a guy who wanted to do nonstop news talk. I know he loves to talk sports. So, you know, from that standpoint, that I'm surprised he didn't have a little bit better of a market. And maybe he did, and maybe it's just all about money. But from all indications, that market obviously wasn't strong enough to make him look at something beyond WFAN.
Yeah, and one more thing before I let you go. He did several interviews where he said he understood the podcast business model unlike anybody who's currently doing it, and that if he went into it, he would clean up, and he had this super secret idea that clearly never materialized.
Yeah, look, I went into his office back in November. We did a 45-minute lengthy piece, and he was gracious with his time, and we talked about a lot of industry things, and that was one of them. And I was looking forward to that. I know, he's got a good relationship with Bill Simmons. I know that, if he was creating a podcast, he probably could charge for it. He probably would, do some things that people would find interesting and become buzzworthy material. But a lot of times you see those things in print and you go, okay, let's see the proof. What do you have that's different? And then they don't happen. And, look, he's trying to drum up some interest clearly by saying that, trying to get whether it's The Ringer or Facebook or whoever, Google to show interest in him, but it didn't materialize. So at the end of the day, Mike is a great radio guy. He's had there's a reason why he's been effective for a long time. And if the worst thing that happens is he goes 2 to 3 more years on The Fan and ultimately has to either be taken off the air down the road or he leaves again down the road because he's just tired of it, so what? I mean, how many guys in this business can say, they had a 30-year run in market one on that dominant of a level?
Thanks so much, Jason. Appreciate your wisdom breaking this down. Hopefully we can do this again the next time there is a colossal sports radio story.
Yeah, we'll just keep our eyes open. Thanks, Ryan. Enjoyed it.
Have a good one.
Such turned stranger.